This is the year to stop overpaying for your family plan. So choose a Straight Talk wireless family plan. Unlimited data, talk, and text on a reliable 5G network. And you can get a new line starting at $25 per line per month for 4 lines, plus taxes and fees and no contracts. That's good decision making. Available at Walmart and on straighttalk.com. Family plan discount with 4 lines, all on the Silver Unlimited plan. Not combinable with auto pay discount. In times of traffic, your data may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Video streams at up to 480p. Willie Nelson, Waylon Jennings, Kris Kristofferson, you know, before they were legends of outlaw country, they were lost souls looking for their sound. Don't miss Mandy Moore and the new scripted Audible original, The Boar's Nest, Sue Brewer and the Birth of Outlaw Country Music. Discover the true untold story of the extraordinary woman behind the rise of outlaw country music and its biggest stars. Hear how one woman's vision in her tiny living room, far from Nashville's Music Row, became the epicenter of a musical movement. Mandy Moore as Sue Brewer in The Boar's Nest. Listen now at audible.com/The Boar's Nest. Hey, it's Bobby Bones. Hey, I just want to say thanks to everybody who has stepped up for the St. Jude kids. St. Jude's doing incredible work fighting childhood cancer. And because of donations like the ones that you give, families never receive a bill ever from St. Jude for treatment, travel, housing, food, none of that. Help St. Jude stop childhood cancer. Become a partner in hope. Get this awesome new This Shirt Saves Lives shirt. It's going to look great on you. So join all the doctors, researchers, and me in this fight. All right, text the word Bobby. It's only 6 numbers to 785-833. Again, text the word Bobby to just these 6 numbers, 785-833. About to hop in with Kris Kirkpatrick from NSYNC, who I just met last week or so. Thought he was a real cool guy. And said, hey, man, I'd love to talk a little more about the NSYNC stuff. And he was like, yeah, sure, why not? Which is cool. And so, you know, you're going to hear us. We'll get into a bunch of stuff. But he came and filled in for the radio show. We referenced that in our conversation. But, yeah, just really enjoyed the guy. Thought he was a real cool dude. So that's coming up in a second. We got a new logo, new image. I wonder, it'll be up soon.
It should be loaded up. I just put it up, so I saw it on my phone.
Very proud of it.
Yeah.
Well, the thing is with this podcast, I think people just think it's me talking. We really do have a general idea here. It's about music for the most part, you know?
Yeah.
We do 99% of the time talk to people who are creating, have created, are thinking about creating music in some way. And then if we don't even, we'll ask them, what song you like right now? So, yeah, we're pretty proud of that. Check out Amy's podcast, Four Things with Amy Brown. Faith, family, food. She just needs another F.
Another F.
Yeah. Then she can just do all Fs. Our studio in here too, we had some shelves built.
Mm-hmm.
One award that I put up on the shelf is actually not an award that I got. It's an award for Andy Roddick.
Oh, really? Which one?
Well, once they do this thing in Austin called the 40 and under. It's right there.
Okay.
And they were like, Andy wasn't able to go. And I was up against him in the award. And he goes, hey, if you win, great. If I win, just go up and accept it for me. So I said, okay, cool. Well, he won. And I went up to accept it for him, and I gave a speech, though. And my speech was, well, Andy's not here, but he wanted me to read this. And I opened up a piece of paper, and I went, well, hey, it's me, Andy. I'd first like to say I don't deserve this award. Bobby Bones does. And then I just talked all the great things that I thought would be funny to mention about me. And then I said, even though I'm going to take this award, and but then it sits here. I never gave it
kept
to
it.
Him. I also kept the award as well. So you'll see that in the video, too. You'll see a lot of the, we're trying to make the studio cool. Like, we really are proud of this podcast. Speaking of that, and being proud of something, Caroline Hobby did a really great live podcast.
Yep.
Where they went to Dirk Bentley's bar, sold out the place. And it was, oh, we may have mentioned this in the last podcast too. It was Brittany Aldean and it was Caitlin Brown.
Yep.
Who Kane Brown's wife and Jason Aldean's wife. And she is the wife of the lead singer of 1,000 Horses. Yeah. But she was, you know, but she was also in a band. And so they did a live podcast, and it's up. It's called Get Real with Caroline Hobby. And I do hope you check that out because I know she's proud of it. We're proud of her. And, you know, if you're looking for a cool podcast to check out, I think that's a good one. She talks to a lot of wives of country singers, but she also now is talking to really empowered women, which is cool. She kind of has found her niche over there. And if you'll go and rate us, we appreciate that. I think you're going to like this next podcast. You can follow me on Instagram if you don't, Mr. Bobby Bones. You can follow the Bobbycast, though.
At the Bobbycast.
At the Bobbycast on Instagram. We love that. We don't have many followers. We started it late.
Yeah, it's a pretty good amount.
What do we have now?
I think it's at like 20-something.
People. Not even 20,000.
Just 20 people.
Like 20 people. Like 23
so if
followers.
If we can get like 22, that'd be awesome.
Yeah, at the Bobbycast. All right. Appreciate you guys. Talk to you soon. Here is me with Chris Kirkpatrick. All right, welcome to episode 230 with Chris Kirkpatrick from NSYNC and also from the depths of our new friendship.
Yeah.
Chris came by and did the radio show last week.
Yeah, now so, it seems like it's every day.
All the time.
Might as well just hang out. Man, you're busy.
Can't get enough of each other. We're all working.
Yeah, well, apparently not as much as you.
I don't have a definable skill, so I...
Dancing? No?
Mm-mm. I'm not a good dancer.
Oh, I didn't look for the mirror ball.
Oh, it's down. You would have seen it. Yeah, you would have seen it.
I thought you said I wouldn't have seen it. That's the reason you put it where it was.
Well, maybe when you walked through the living room, and we just had to take my table in two parts in there. See that? Mm. I was a little embarrassed.
Oh.
Yeah. My dog pooped all over the rug, so I had to remove the rug.
Oh, nice.
Took the table in two parts. It broke in half.
I've got a really good cleaner for that, because I have a big dog that likes to do things like that, too. And
I have a good cleaner, too.
Do you?
It's a very valuable thing to have.
Yeah. Yeah, and a handyman.
You know, so I use Zero Res for cleaning. And you know what I use for a handyman that's been good is that app.
Tackle.
Fan. This is not a commercial for either one of them, by the way.
Yeah, right.
Who's your cleaner? Like, who do you use?
We just found that my wife found this company that, like, you know, deep cleans the floors. Because we had, whatever the big generic people that come in, and they actually almost ruined our carpet, like, trying to do the cleaning thing. And we're like, we couldn't get some of the stains up. So we called this other company, man. They came in, and I couldn't believe what they got out of that carpet.
You can tell we're getting older because we're both excited about carpet cleaning.
Carpet cleaning. Yeah.
What about like, oh, wow, tell
and
me more. It was like
dogs pooping.
We'll
delete that out, right? Just to bleep it.
Yeah, yeah.
Every time we say
poop. We won't
poop.
Even delete it. We'll just bleep it, yeah.
And just bleep just every time we say poop.
Raw and uncut. You're going to a show after this podcast.
Don't do that to me. Don't do it.
Well, I
soul decision.
No, collective soul.
Collective soul.
We were debating which soul it was.
Soul asylum, soul decision.
Yeah.
And it was collective soul.
And it
now I would know soul to soul. Like that one it's definitely different and
that one I would know less of.
Really?
So Mike, if you pull these up.
I think I'm a little older than you though, right? So that's
I'm 39. How old are you?
Like 8-9 years old.
Okay, but so not enough. Let's just walk through them. Soul Asylum is runaway train, never going back.
Yeah.
No one down a one-way track. Yep. That was big in the 90s.
Yep. There you go.
Jam, right?
Yeah, it was a great song. Great.
Soul Decision, Mike, if you can pull that down, was like a knockoff of you guys.
That was late 90s. I think they opened up for us.
Yeah. And they had one
I was getting them confused.
Really big song.
That's so bad.
Mike, play Soul Decision.
Finding them.
That's fine. They don't pop up on our streaming service?
I don't even think they do.
What?
Really?
I want to say I ran into one of those guys the other day, too.
Yeah, they definitely had a big song, like an upbeat.
Yeah.
Let's see. Soul Decision Radio. But there is no Soul Decision that comes up.
Really?
Except for a song.
I'm not even sure that's them.
And Soul Decision Radio is all NSYNC, Jordan Knight, New Kids. So it's definitely a thing.
Hmm.
And then they have, and then there's Collective Soul.
Collective Soul.
Which is December.
Oh.
Why drink the water from my hand?
Yep. You know what?
This.
Yep.
And they have, Mike, what's their second biggest song they have listed on there?
Yeah.
The World I Know, maybe?
The World I Know, yep.
This was a big jam. When I walk upon high.
They're very much like Toad the Wet Sprockety.
Yeah.
Little same era, right? Wasn't that same? Was that still mid-90s? Maybe early mid-90s?
Toad may have been a little...
Earlier?
Maybe a little earlier. I think these guys are a little older.
And live.
Yes.
They were also kind of this...
Who
was like college rock. Kind of stuff.
Who was when you were growing up and you were into, like when music started to get really important to you,
mm-hmm.
who was it for you?
When I was young, I mean, my mom and dad really influenced me with the Beatles. And they weren't together, but, you know, it's crazy. Separately, like my mom, you know, was always listening. And that was almost her like teeny bopper years was the Beatles, even though my mom was 16 when I was born. So I was her teeny bopper years. But, and my dad is a big, you know, Beatles head. And I actually, when I first started playing guitar, I would play guitar left-handed, and I couldn't figure out why it took me so long to pick up the guitar, because I'd always watch Paul McCartney, and he was like my idol. And if I was air guitar, I still to this day, if I air guitar, I'll air guitar left-handed sometimes. But yeah, so I flipped all the strings on the guitar and started playing left-handed. Then I realized I'm right-handed.
See, I'm left-handed and I play left-handed.
Right.
But I tried to play right-handed for a long time because all
they're
the guitars,
everywhere, yeah, right, they're everywhere.
There is no left-handed guitar that just chills.
Yeah.
You can't be somewhere and you grab a guitar.
Did you do the thing where you switch the strings around and it was so hard
I did the nut. Uh-huh. So I did two things. One, I tried to just flip it upside down, take a right-handed guitar and just play it upside down, which means no changing of strings.
Right.
Just play it the other way.
Right.
Didn't work. So then I would remove the strings myself.
Wow, those chords must have been...
When you don't know any chords, they're all weird, right? But I couldn't learn from people or even watch.
Just put your finger here. No, mm-hmm. no, we're going to put it down here.
And then I tried the nut. There's a little nut on a guitar. Mm-hmm. It has a holder for each string, and as the string gets bigger, the bigger mm-hmm. string goes in. But then you have to put the big string in the tiny nut.
Yeah.
And
you got to reverse all those, and it always pops out.
But then I just was like, screw it. I went to Walmart. Got a chord sheet, went to a pawn shop, paid $50, bought a left-handed guitar.
Nice.
And I just play for comedy. You know, I do music and stand-up.
Yeah,
what was it? You have the Beatles, but when you were 16 or 17.
You mean like the pop music?
Just, because for me it was 90s grunge mm-hmm. and Garth Brooks mm-hmm. was kind of the two lanes when music started to be important for me.
That's when you can tell that there is just a bit of a difference between us, because mine would have been... Like to me, I look back on music in 1984, for some reason, I was 80s baby, so I mean, grew up in the 80s. But 1984 and 1988 had some of the best music. Usually if I hear like a great song, like I'll listen to the 80s or Classic Rewind or something. That's what I was listening to on the way here. And you listen to it and I'm like, if it's a really great song, I mean, you know, Van Halen, their album was, you know, 1984. But there's like... You know, there was something about the year 1984 and the year 1988 that just all this great music came out in those 2 years. Was that an election year, maybe? I don't know.
No, that's a theory. I didn't think about that.
I mean, I don't know if that makes any sense or any difference. If
so,
we should be
Boys
listening to some good stuff here. Was that?
A Beastie Boys guy at all?
Oh, I love the Beastie Boys. I was into a lot of hip hop when pop music, I started really getting into pop music. I mean, we grew up really poor. Like, we didn't have anything. You know, my friends were taping on the radio, doing the record. I couldn't afford a cassette player to record off the radio. So I was getting music any way I could get it, but the only music I could ever find was pop music. So I really got into pop music. I really liked some weird stuff too, like the Ramones, Adam Ant, Billy Idol was really pop, and Billy was cool. I liked David Bowie. There were some bands, it's funny to me looking back on how... Like Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers. When I was a kid, I hated Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers. Now it's like one of my favorite bands to listen to. It's like once you understand music and you really, you know, grow into your musical self, all your music things change. And who I love, I'm definitely a real poppy guy. Like I really even think the Ramones are real poppy. Beastie Boys were, you know, but I remember when the Run DMC Walk This Way came out, when that video came out, I remember asking somebody, who's that rock band or who are these actors that are singing with Run DMC? Because I listened to, you know, a lot of hip hop at that time and Aerosmith. And then, of course, later 80s, it was all, you know, hair bands and rock. And
how'd you feel about that?
I loved it, man. I loved it. Def Leppard, you know, I had everything from them. And I was one of my first shows I ever went to. Very first concert I went to was Weird Al Yankovic and the New Monkees, which will just tell you like where my weirdness is. But my first concert, like with my buddies in high school, was Poison and Tesla. And then we went to like Def Leppard, Kiss, Motley Crue. I mean, I was in Ohio at the time. We went to like Cleveland, you know, where they're like, what's up, Cleveland? And it's like, it was like the middle of that show, The Dirt. Like we were right there when Tommy Lee's Upside Down. I was living through that. And it was just, you know, that music was just so popular. It was just so catchy. And again, it was all pop music. I love Madonna. I love Prince. I love Michael Jackson, but all the real poppy stuff.
When you talk about Poison, I got to know Bret Michaels a little later on, after obviously Poison had done their thing. And even after Rock of Love, when he came back and mm-hmm. kind of started again, you ever met that guy?
We actually, that's funny you said that. In December, Joey and I do this boat parade in Fort Lauderdale, and he was the host guy. And we just basically take down boats, like down the causeways and stuff. And the night before, he was having a show, and he invited us out to a show. And he asked us to come out and sing the last song with him. And I was just in heaven, because we met him way back in the day. And when we were on tour, he came out to a show. And I know he's a Pittsburgh guy, so, you know, we were talking about the Steelers and stuff like that. But, like, to be out on stage with him and, like, thinking back to, like, that was one of my first concerts, and here I am, like, I don't know if it's equal, but, you know, just on that level was pretty cool.
He's a nice guy.
Really, he was so nice.
And a great athlete, oddly, because we played softball together.
Yeah.
And he would show up in blue jeans and a cutout shirt and his cowboy hat, a different cowboy hat every time.
Right.
And just dominate center field. You wouldn't hit anything by him. In blue jeans. Diving.
Did he have cowboy boots on?
He would switch the boots out before he went out.
All right. But that would be impressive.
A super kind guy.
Yeah.
And I was just struck at his athletic prowess.
Mm-hmm.
Even because he's in his 40s now, and the guy was running around like he was 22 years old.
Oh, no, he's in his 50s.
Is he in his 50s now?
He's got to be in his 50s. I'm in my 40s. Like, that was like when I was a kid. So he's got to be probably mid to later 50s even.
When you have those moments where you go, wow, this is cool, like something I looked up to, and now I get to be a part of it. Did you have a lot of those when you were within sync?
Oh, man.
Or was it happening so fast? Could you appreciate him?
Yeah, I think you still appreciate him. You know, there's no way some of the stuff we do could just blow by. But, I mean, you know, hanging out with Michael Jackson, performing with Michael Jackson.
Did you meet him?
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Talk to him?
Oh, yeah.
What was that like? What was he like?
It was strange. I felt there was this weirdness, like, around him. You know, a lot of it was really him. I think it was what was around him. I think he had a lot of yes men around him. And I think there was a lot of people just like feeding into what he was and not who he was. And it was kind of strange, because it almost was like you were just talking to an icon instead of a human for a little while. But, you know, really, really generous guy, really, you know, very, very soft-spoken, just like, you would think somebody like that commands, you know, attention or whatever, but, you know, he just was very soft-spoken, you know, and he let all his singing and dancing and his stage stuff speak for him normally.
Was it wild to watch someone be so soft in his mannerisms and speech and then get on stage
and just kill it
and be dynamic?
Yeah, it's insane. I mean, again, kind of going back to what I was just saying, I'm a Steelers fan. It's like Troy Polamalu. I don't know if you're a big mm-hmm. football guy, but he was a safety defensive back for the Steelers. And he was the same way. He was very, you know, hey, you know, quiet, whatever. And you see him on the field and he's jumping over. That's the way Michael was. You know, Michael's just very, hey, guys, you know, thanks so much for coming out, whatever. And you're just like, this is Michael? Like, I thought Michael come in. Hey, this is, you know. I mean,
he's
obviously
doing
a lot
kicks.
Higher than that. Yeah. Doing his little front kicks and
So that's cool. So Michael Jackson's one of those. What's mm-hmm. another one you look back and go, man, that's freaking cool?
Paul McCartney. Paul McCartney was big. He came, I met him in an award show, and then I went to one of his shows and sat with him backstage.
How was he as a person?
I mean, he could have been a jerk, and I would have been like, he's a god, you know, but he was really, really nice. And I think one of the coolest, though, was Phil Collins, because we actually did a song with Phil Collins. And there's a part in the song where it's like in the band, I do the harmonies. You know, Justin and JC usually do the leads, and then I would do their harmonies on the verses and a lot of the harmonies in the choruses. And he's like, well, okay, so who does like the harmonies? And I think Justin or something. Oh, Chris usually does like the harmonies. He goes, okay, well, then you guys go in and do this part. And then me and Chris will go in and sing this part. And I was like, why don't you, do you want to go in? And then I'll go in, because we went in and I'm standing there at the mic. I don't even remember what I was singing. I'm just singing into the same mic and Phil Collins is right there. And I'm just like, you know, first cassette I ever had was No Jacket Required. So that was another big moment.
That's cool.
And his daughter's really sweet too. She's an actress.
Yeah, and she's super hot.
Yeah, and she was there that day.
I don't remember her name, but I remember.
She was very young. She was very young, and she was there that day. And I remember sitting in the booth while the guys were in there, and she looks over at me. She goes, I can't believe I'm sitting in the same room with you right now. And I'm like, your dad is Phil Collins, you know? Like, it's crazy. And then I went and saw her a couple years ago at Justin's show in LA, and she was there, and she goes, "Oh, do you remember me?" And I'm like, "Yeah, you're like famous."
Lily
now.
Collins. Lily has Collins. To be her name.
Lily.
Yeah.
Lily. And I was like, "Yeah, you're like famous now. It's crazy."
What was cool was I remember. I'm just going from memory here. Mm-hmm. There was an award show, maybe one of the, like the VMAs, because you guys were a lot of those. But you mm-hmm. came out, and there were these TV screens with
that
your
was
heads.
The MTV Awards, I think.
And you guys did the dancing behind TV screens of gigantic yeah. your own heads.
Yeah.
Like really one of the coolest perform that I remember ever.
It's great. That's the one, that's the performance that a lot of people talk about. And they're always like, and at the time it was weird because Wade Robson, who was our choreographer at the time, said he's got this concept. And I think, you know, flat screen TVs were not the thing yet. Like they were just coming out and, you know, you're talking 2000 maybe. And, he's like, "We're going to film this thing where your heads are on the screens and you guys are going to be dancing below." And I was like, it's crazy because you think to yourself, yeah, that'll be cool. That makes sense. That's going to be cool. But you don't have any idea the impact. And like when you see it and when people watch it, and that's all they talk about. But I think it's also the way he choreographed it and the way he filmed what our faces were doing, because sometimes our faces would all switch around and it, you know, when we were doing the choreography, we were just doing what we were doing. But when I watched it again, it made a lot more sense.
You mentioned earlier that your mom was 16 when she had you. Mine mm-hmm. was 15.
Oh, yeah?
So I know what it's like.
You know, you said something at the radio station, too. I mean, I know you're kind of joking around about the government cheese, or you were talking about stuff like that. It's really weird because, like, especially in the industry, when you find people that actually really know where you came from, it's really kind of a cool moment. And you're just kind of like, wow, man, like, I went back and I think I told my wife, I was like, that's really kind of cool because he gets it and he understands that, you know, what we have now is all icing. You know, it's not something that we worked for and we deserved. You know, from day one, it's been icing and you appreciate it. And you look back and, you know, I did a foundation in Orlando when we were there, and it was all for, you know, underprivileged kids. And we used to do some crazy fun stuff, and we do it around Halloween because, to me, Halloween is a time that people don't think about, you know, charities. You don't think about giving. But especially for kids, it's really important. For people, it's really important. Everybody likes to dress up. Everybody likes to be somebody else. Well, so do those kids. And those kids get a chance to, like, even for a day, be the Hulk or be Iron Man or whoever. And it was fun. We'd always buy them costumes. We used to throw, like, big Halloween bashes in my exclusive, like, gated community. But just for the kids, we'd have the neighbor kids come in, but all our kids had the VIP bracelets on, so they could get into certain things, and they were the coolest ones, and the little rich kids, which were nice kids too, but it was nice for a change to just kind of flip it on them. And another time, I remember we got some food, and every time we'd go, like, shop for a family, whatever, and we'd get them food too, we'd always buy the good stuff, because when I was growing up, it's like we get a knock on the door around Christmas time and it's two grocery bags from the church.
Me too.
And it's creamed corn and it's like, and you think about it, it's like what you don't want from your cupboard. You're like, "Oh, we're not going to use this. Give this. Because beggars can't be choosers, and we never were. But when I went out, I was getting like Hawaiian punch. And we went to this house and one house and gave the stuff out, and this kid grabbed like the cereal or something. And he just starts looking at his mom. "Mom, it's the good stuff." You know, and that's the point where you're just kind of like, "Wow, that was cool." Like, that's why you do it.
I remember Christmas one year, because church would bring us gifts too, because we didn't get gifts.
Right.
We couldn't afford gifts.
Yeah.
And so they would, you know, beat on the door. It's funny because that when you said that, I know exactly what that feels
like.
Yeah,
exactly.
And I got a paint by numbers duck picture, which I would have looked at and thought, never in a million years would I want that. But it was the only gift I got that year.
Yeah.
And I think it's one of my favorite gifts that I ever got.
Yeah.
And it was a crappy brush with a bunch of greens and yellows and a duck. And I painted that thing and I was so proud of it.
Do you find yourself like now, you know, now that you've got money and now that you've got it, do you find yourself going back and finding like some of the stuff either you wanted or maybe something that you had that meant a ton to you? Like I had a bunch of G.I. Joes, I think, you know, maybe, you know, a couple handfuls of G.I. Joes. And obviously, you know, we moved around a lot too, so we lost a lot of stuff. But I've gone back out on eBay and bought those again and sat there. And my son actually was playing with them the other day, and I was kind of like, yeah, this is cool.
That's pretty cool. I find what I try to do in I call it selfish charity, because, for example, my high school basketball team, I couldn't afford the shoes, and you had to have the shoes to play on. And it wasn't a thing where it was like only the kids that can afford the shoes can play, but it was just understood that everybody could afford $60, and I couldn't.
Right.
So I just didn't play basketball, and I really wanted to, but not because I wasn't good enough, but because I couldn't afford the shoes.
Yeah.
And I just didn't want to be a charity case all the time. So what I do now is I buy the whole team shoes.
Oh,
so
nice.
Not one kid has to feel that
right,
way.
Right.
I just want to eliminate how I feel. So it's almost like I'm selfishly going back in time.
Yeah, yeah, oh yeah.
And helping me.
Isn't it funny though how sometimes you look back and you feel so sorry for that kid, but then you're like, no, wait, that kid was me. Who cares? He's
well,
fine.
What
he
I do,
okay.
In a way I go, you know what? The best thing that ever happened to me was the struggle.
Yeah.
Because I am tenacious. I'm resilient. I'm built for whatever you put in front of me.
So tell me this. That's the same, but it's kind of a catch-22 with me because now I have a son. My son, whatever he wants, to a point, he gets. I mean, obviously, we don't spoil him, but everything we give him, we let him know that, you know, he's getting this. You know, we try to, he's still young enough. He doesn't have a lot of friends, so he can't, you know, he's not acclimated with kids yet to really understand how other kids have it. But how do you teach that now to a kid that never has to worry about it? How do you teach that wanting to go out, wanting to fight for everything you have, to a kid that doesn't have to fight for everything? You know, you can't not give him things. You know, you can't say, no, you know, you're not going to have this because I didn't have it and I want you to learn. You know, you still try to do it, but at the same time, you have to, it's this balancing act of trying to teach him that all kids don't get that, you know, and I'm already like trying to distill in him when he goes to school, make sure he befriends every kid in school, even the quiet kid, the dirty kid, you know, whoever, make sure every kid feels special in school, because who knows, you know, possibly, you know, being my son or being around it, that he might, you know, be kind of popular. And I'm hoping he is, because if he is, I'm going to say, you know, at that age, you already have to understand, you have to use that. You know, you have to understand that you were just in a situation, not because of you, but because of the way you were brought up.
You know, what's interesting about you is you were able to break the almost impossible generational cycle of what we struggle with in America of poverty. And it's hard to get out because if you're impoverished, and I'll put me in that too, yeah, there's not a lot of resources that go into us.
Right.
And into my friends and me and myself. Mm-hmm. And so it's rare, and thank God, I was blessed to just be real smart, mm-hmm, and standardized tests, and I could, you know, I was good, it was quick. And it's hard to break that, but you have one of the rare tasks of now being a father going through that situation, because you know what it was like and what it made you, but you also knew what it felt like to go through that.
Mm-hmm. And to have those kids that my son will become talking to you like you're, you know, just nobody, which is funny to me. I love my class reunions, you know, because those are great. Because I go back and here I was, this kid that, you know, couldn't afford my class ring. We didn't have a car. We didn't have electricity a lot of the times. You know, we didn't have a lot of things. So, you know, they were like most likely to never hear from again, even at class reunions. I would have won it, you know, but then to, you know, come out and do this stuff, it's so strange. It's just almost surreal. Like I a lot of times feel like I'm living an out-of-body experience and looking at my life through what I always wished it was as a kid.
This festival and concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your next stop before attending your next concert. Tecovas has seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring. You're talking about men's boots, women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition, timeless style, always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort, little to no break-in period. Like, it's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Plus, direct consumer pricing keeps the value on your feet, the money in your pocket. So stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary drink, shop the new styles. You like the smell of leather or no?
I love it.
Yeah, that's what the whole store basically is, fresh leather.
Yep.
Friendly staff. Or like the smell of staff?
I don't know. I guess I'm sure they smell good there.
Many stores have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. What a gift, too. Regular live music and events, there is no in-store experience like this. If you can't make it to a store, just visit tecovas.com.
T-E-C-O-V-A-S.com.
T-E-C-O-V-A-S.
Yeah.
Tecovas.com. Find your new favorite pair of boots today. This is the year to stop overpaying for your family plan. So choose a Straight Talk Wireless family plan. Unlimited data, talk, and text on a reliable 5G network. And you can get a new line starting at $25 per line per month for 4 lines, plus taxes and fees and no contracts. That's good decision making. Available at Walmart and on straighttalk.com. Family plan discount with 4 lines, all on the Silver Unlimited plan. Not combinable with auto pay discount. In times of traffic, your data may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Video streams add up to 480p. Willie Nelson, Waylon Jennings, Kris Kristofferson. How did the biggest names in outlaw country start a musical revolution? Through one woman's vision from one tiny living room. Don't miss Mandy Moore as Sue Brewer in the new scripted Audible original, The Boar's Nest, Sue Brewer and the Birth of Outlaw Country Music. Discover the true untold story of the extraordinary woman behind the outlaw country music movement and its biggest stars. Brewer shaped the sound and soul of country music as we know it today, despite never picking up an instrument herself. Lovingly dubbed as the Boar's Nest, Sue's place was an intimate staging ground where a new breed of singer-songwriters, wounded souls, wayward upstarts, that's where they would spur each other and tap into something bigger and something realer. Starring Mandy Moore and featuring Eben Moss Backrack as Shel Silverstein and TJ Osborne as Johnny Cash alongside a full ensemble cast. Audible invites you to enter the Boar's Nest and experience the rise of a musical revolution. One woman, one time, one place. The Boar's Nest. Sue Brewer and the Birth of Outlaw Country Music. Listen now at audible.com/theboarsnest.
You didn't have Facebook when NSYNC was blowing up. None of it, because it wasn't a thing yet.
Right.
But would you have people like reaching out to you? Because you said high school reunion. And I go through this a little different now, but how did people get a hold of you and be like, hey, remember me? We were best friends back in the day.
I mean, we had a website and, you know, it was funny back then with even just with the website of how we were trying to be progressive with it. And we had this whole idea about this like 3D market and, you know, everything where it was all inclusive and, you know, not knowing that cell phones would be what they are. But there's a lot of ways that happened. I actually, you know, I'm still in touch with some friends, you know, from way back in the day that I saw their sign at Hershey in the audience saying, hey, Kris, it's these people. And I had security guy go out and get them. And, you know, some of them I've stayed in contact with, most of my high school friends, you know, at least a couple of them, and they know how to get in touch with a couple of them, or they'd say, hey, so-and-so wants to know if they can come down. And, you know, it's really kind of cool because I think a lot of my high school friends that are still my friends now were my friends in high school. You know, we were all, I wasn't the popular kid. I said like the least popular, but it was just kind of like, I was just like everybody's little brother. Like I was little. That's another thing I had not
like
going
in
for
physical
me.
Stature.
Yeah,
you were
physical
a small
stature.
Guy.
I was 5'100" my junior year of high school.
Wow.
So I grew about 9-10 inches after my junior year of high school. And I went to my 5-year reunion before NSYNC blew up, and there were guys coming up to me going, hey, who are you here with? And I'm like, there were 70 kids in our class. I know you, Tim. Remember? It's Kris Kirkpatrick. They're like, oh, yeah, wow. You're bigger. You've changed.
When you say before NSYNC blew up, did people feel like did anybody go, man, you guys really hit a hard quick? And you're going, if you had any idea what we've been doing,
the
you would
work.
Have. The like, because for me, people go, boy, in the last couple of years, you've really, and I'm like, man, I guess I'm a 15-year overnight success.
Right.
Because you only see like when the fruition comes.
Well, I think the difference is, I think blowing up isn't the right way to talk about it because it was almost blowing up overnight. It was the overnight success story. That's, you know, that to me is different. That to me is, you know, that you just, you know, it's like, hey, hi, Justin, my name's Kris. Nice to, oh, we're famous. You know, it's like, there was a lot of work into that. There was a lot we did. There was, you know, obviously a lot of, but when we released the Disney special in the States, that was the first time any kid in the United States, we were all getting on an airplane and some girl goes, hey, that's those guys on the Disney show. Can I have an autograph? And we all like stopped in the jetway and went running back out because we're like, wait, you're American. You know us? And she's like, yeah, I saw you on the Disney special. And it was so weird because that girl was the first one. And maybe, you know, the next day it just became all over. Like everybody would start stopping us. And it just became, because then that Disney special was, you know, this, it started this whole trend, and that's what kids were watching. That was the that was the blippy, that was the, you know, whatever, Barney or whatever, you know, that Disney special was what all kids focused on. So when kids get onto something, I mean, it's crazy how they run with it and, you know, they want to be an adult. And so they take it and make it in. And that's what happened to us. I mean, they just took us as their band and blew us up.
You had been performing and had music released overseas though, right?
Oh yeah.
So when they go, hey, you, let's do a quick infancy story. You mm-hmm. actually were the guy that was first when NSYNC started to come together, right?
As far as the band together.
Right. Yeah. So you're the guy.
Right.
So you go, all right, we're going to find. And in your mind, were you putting together a band, a boy band, a singing group? What was the idea?
So when I first started music, I fell into music. You know, it was like I always wanted to do something. I wanted to be a football player. I wanted to do all these other things, but I kept falling into music. I landed the lead role of Oliver Twist in our high school production when I was in sixth grade.
Could you sing at that point in your mind? Like, were you a good singer?
I still don't think I'm a good singer. You know, it's like, I mean, I could stay on key and, you know, it's and again, you know, talk about 5 foot, 100 pounds my junior year. Obviously, my voice didn't change until, you know, probably about 2 weeks ago. But, you know, it was there was a lot of I enjoyed music. I always kept falling into it. I moved to Orlando and started college. And so that's why I was one of the older ones in the band. Like I was already, I graduated. Howie from the Backstreet Boys and I were in college together. And I was just there and I was, you know, taking random classes just so I could say I went to college and, you know, learn a trade or something. And there was an ad for a choir. And I went to the ad and I got a scholarship. And the next thing you know, I got another scholarship. And then I went to a prestigious school, Rollins, with a scholarship in music. And it just kept following me. But the whole time I was doing acoustic guitars with a buddy of mine, like we'd play at coffee shops or whatever it was. And then when I was in high school, we did these quartets and I loved a cappella. I loved harmonies. So I put together a quartet and at all these coffee shops and things we were doing, me playing the guitar with my buddy Steve was like, okay, yeah, cool. Driving and crying, cool. Indigo Girls, all right, whatever. But then when we go out and do this a cappella stuff, like everybody just went nuts. I mean, girls were just like, oh my God, this is the best ever. And I'm like, wow, like there's something to this. So I was trying to do the a cappella thing. And I even remember when Howie and Charlie came to me with their pictures with the Backstreet Boys, I was like, how's that going to work? You guys are like singing to tapes. You know, I'm like, we're
who's
like up
Charlie,
here.
By the way?
Charlie's a great story. Charlie Edwards, was one of my really close friends. He's a great guy. He's how I got connected with all of this, all the Lou Pearlman and all that. So I had a quartet at school. Charlie was in my quartet. Howie was in my class. Howie came into school looking for kids for the Backstreet Boys, and he went to Charlie. So him and Charlie joined the Backstreet Boys. Charlie had a falling out, I guess, with a producer. So Charlie came to me and called me and said, hey, you know, I want to be involved, but could we bring your group that you have to this guy, Lou Pearlman? And I was like, yeah, sure. So then, you know, it was probably about a year we were just grinding and I had like three jobs and full-time school. And it was like, I'd be late for some rehearsals and they were just like, you know what, I can't do this anymore. And he quit. And I said, but I had the introduction with Lou. And that's when, you know, Lou was like, I need you to get the band. Like I want another band. I've got Backstreet. I want another band, which sucks for them. Like, and you know, in hindsight, it really sucks for them because here was this guy who they looked at as their brother, their Papa Lou. And he's out there as a business guy going, and he even said it, he'd say it to us all the time. You know, I've got Burger King, I want McDonald's. You know, they get along, they coexist. And, you know, if he would have been an honest guy and just done that, you know, who knows where he'd be. But
this Charlie guy, just to go back for 1 second.
Yeah.
You're telling me that he
yes.
was in both
yes.
Backstreet and NSYNC?
Yes.
And then what, yes. what is he alive still?
Yeah.
And what's he doing?
I'm pretty sure. I haven't talked to him in
then he
years.
Joined O-Town.
I used to run into him a lot.
That's crazy.
Yeah. And he actually left my band to go teach golf in at Club Med. And I was begging him. I'm like, dude, you know, I'm holding on to strings here. Like I had so many jobs and I had, you know, full-time school. And I was like still trying to arrange music and teach people parts and put together rehearsals and all this stuff. And when he quit, I remember, you know, just being in the lowest, one of the lowest places of my life, laying there thinking that I had a potential with this Lou Pearlman guy, and the guys in my band would keep dropping out or quitting.
So who was the first guy of
the band now?
Of the group that you were like, all right, come do it.
Justin.
And they said yes. Really?
Justin.
And yeah. And you met him, was this Mickey Mouse Club?
Nope.
So
the real story is, I was making cold calls. I was just calling people. I'm like, I need to find, parts. I need to find guys that sing. I need to do whatever. So I don't remember. I think I went through the paper or something like that. And I called agents. I called like 19 agents. I'm like, listen, I'm putting together this group. Okay, thank you so much. This is my number. This is my address. Click. I did 19 agents. One person got back to me. And I went over, I remember it like it was yesterday, Studio Plaza in Orlando, and pulled up in my little Nissan Sentra or whatever I was driving. And he gave me this manila envelope, and I went out and, popped in this cassette tape into my player and heard this voice. And I'm like, oh my God, like, this is unbelievable. This is better than anybody that's been in my band yet. And I pulled up the headshot, and I'm like, Justin Timberlake, is he an Indian? Like, I didn't know if that was a shtick or what was going on. And, called his mom, and that was a tough call because they were back in Memphis. And I was like, hey, I'm this 24, 23-year-old guy, and I want to put your 14-year-old son in a band with me. And, and they had this thing where it was like they went down for Mickey Mouse Club, and they said, well, if we go there for Mickey Mouse Club and we don't get it, we'll go to Disney. So, they kind of said it again. They also suggested, they said, well, he's been working with JC. So JC came down, and I actually met JC first because Lou went and picked JC up at the airport, and they came to my work, and I met JC, and then Justin came, and the three of us were out one night, and we ran into Joey randomly, and I knew Joey. Joey's the only one of them that I knew prior because we worked at Universal Studios together, and I knew Joey, and we're like, dude, we're looking for a band. Can you do it? And he's like, yep, I'm in. Because he was in this group in high school called The Big Guys with Luis Fonsi.
Oh, yeah, really?
Yeah, which was in, and they were like this, they were like this high school band. It's so weird to see Fonsi, doing so much now. And his brother, John, is amazing too. Because his brother, John, was in my group. But I'll just make this story really long. But yeah, so then Joey got in the band, and he brought in this kid, Jason. And that's how we got the name, because Justin's mom was looking at all our names, and Justin, Chris, Joey, Jason, and JC, the last letter all spells NSYNC. And that's how we got our name. And then the night we were signing the deal, Jason quit, left, and it took us a year to find Lance.
The night you were signing?
Yeah, we ended up signing the next day, just the four of us. But we needed a bass. Like, we knew we needed a bass. You had... Joey was the lowest singer, and Joey's a good baritone, but he's no bass, and we had no low end. And I remember when Lance came over to the house, and we're like, our vocal coach was like, we think we like him. And he was in there, and Justin and I were listening in the door, just like high-fiving, because Lance just kept going lower and lower and lower. And I was like, man, this is unbelievable.
So when you guys get together, and when Lance finally comes in, had you decided how you wanted to present yourselves, or you were going to, or were you still going, we're a pure vocal group? Because when did the rest come in? The dancing, the stage, we'll call it stagemanship?
I think that was slowly, weeded into what we were doing. I mean, I think at some point we had to realize that we couldn't just be an a cappella group doing what we did. We wanted up-tempo songs, and a cappella up-tempo, you can't really dance to. It's more of, listening. But then we just kind of, Justin and JC had been writing some tracks, and our vocal coach, who was actually really big in Nashville, like I'm running into people all the time now that knew her, Robin Wiley, she was real intricate in helping us with our sound, because she knew right away, like, we were like, oh, well, Chris will sing the high stuff, and Lance will sing the low stuff, and Joey will sing the middle stuff, and Justin and JC will do the leads. But she really kind of, formed our sound, and her arrangements and things she wrote. One of my favorite songs we ever did to this day was a song called I Thought She Knew. And it was, it was all her arrangement, and it was just so intricate and so unbelievable. And it was so fun to do, because here I've got four other guys that are talented enough to know parts. And that's a big thing. Like, there's so many times you'll start singing something, and everybody jumps on whatever you're singing, But to sing your own part, even when it's rubbing or doing whatever, it's like, it's It was really cool. We used to find anywhere we could sing and just sing together.
And then who goes, we should take this overseas first?
Well, that was, Lou was always involved. Like, Lou was involved in that at that time. As soon as Justin and JC came down, Lou was like, all right, I can be involved. Because even before, like I said, when I was calling Justin's mom, Lou said, don't say I'm involved. And I'm like,
Why is that?
Because he didn't want to upset Backstreet Boys and his whole company, who Backstreet was their baby. He didn't want to go to them and go, well, I got another one.
So they didn't know?
Not at first.
While you guys were forming and you started to actually be?
No.
They didn't know?
I think the guys kind of knew because, you know, I'd be at Brian's, I'd be at Lou's house and, you know, talking business. So I may be leaving Brian or somebody be coming in. And they're always like, what is he doing? Like, why is he here? What are they, you know, what's the deal on them? And that's again why I said it really sucks for them. Like they were treated unfairly in the whole situation because it's not our fault. Here we are. We just wanted to work. You know, we just wanted to be a band. And they're the ones that were like getting like the rug pulled out from under them by him going, by the way, I got another one just in case.
Did that ever happen to you guys?
Oh, I mean, but the difference is we knew he was doing it. Mm. You know, it was like we already assumed that's who Lou was. That's what he's going to do. I mean, it happened like 30 times for us, you know, and it was just like, we just with each other, we just have to say, listen, we're just going to work. We have to work 1,000 times harder. You know, we had to work 1,000 times harder just to be equal, you know, and that was great because again, it goes back to that drive we were talking about. It gave us our drive.
And what do people back home, like mom and dad, they're split at this part.
Yeah.
And so are they encouraging you to continue pursuing music where, let's be honest, if you're going to pursue music, there's not a lot there.
Right.
99.9% of people who do it, it's hard to pay the bills, much less thrive.
My family's always been supportive. I think the fact that, you know, they had nothing, like I didn't have anything else. Like I wasn't like, I'm going to be a zoologist or, you know, a marine biologist or something. It was like, I'm doing this. If it works, and you know, my family's like, if it works, great. They're not going, don't do this, go find a job. And I had 3 jobs. So they're like, you know, they're all behind, and they were really, really encouraging. And it was a lot of, it felt good because, you know, I knew I had that safety net.
When did you feel like you were going to be able to pay the bills singing?
After the first gig I ever did, I got like $50 or something playing acoustic guitar. And I'm like, man, this is unbelievable. I can't believe I just got paid for doing music. And, you know, we got a checks and...
Did you get a signing bonus when you guys all signed NSYNC? When you did, the 4 of you?
Oh, no. There was so much... Someday when the after school special movie or whatever, the ABC movie is out on us, there will be the first check presentation, which is hilarious because we'd been on tour for... I want to say going on 2 years, maybe. We'd been opening acts. We'd done countless radio shows, all these things. And our label was giving us checks, and they got out these big checks and, you know, little gold records and everything. And they brought out these checks for like $10,000 each. And Justin and I are like high-fiving each other. Like, I've never even seen that much money in my life. This is the best day. And JC's like, hold on a minute. You know, something's not right here. We've been working for 2 years. And I looked at him like, dude, why are you being a Debbie Downer? And he's like, how much money did you make bussing tables at the Outback? And I was like, I don't know, $20,000 a year? He goes, exactly. I was like,
Was JC that guy at the group?
JC's smart. JC knows his stuff. And his uncle's a lawyer and you know, his family's really into that. So JC wouldn't let it, JC didn't let it get by him. We let it fly right by us, but JC catches that.
Is it because there's so much going on? Is the tornadoes happening?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, for sure. I mean, we had no time to ourselves. There was no time to even think about things. There was no time to think that when we signed our first record contract, Lance wasn't in it yet. So it was just the 4 of us, but we signed it. We signed our contract with 5 people, you know, me, Justin, JC, Joey, and Lou Pearlman. He was the 5th member signed on our record. And I just heard somebody talking about this the other day. You know, it's your first record, your first contract. You know, you're going to get screwed, but that was like proper.
Do you know how many records you had to give in that first deal? Because now standard is 5.
I think it was 5.
Yeah,
I think it was 5. It didn't matter. We got out of it. I mean, we broke the contract because we just went and signed with Jive. They signed us, ended up signing us to RCA. It was after our first big record in the States came out. And right before our huge record, we actually went over to Jive because we broke at the very beginning because we signed, the six of us then signed to Lou. Lou signed us to BMG in Germany. BMG signed us to RCA in the States. So when we broke it off with Lou, we broke the whole chain. And it was like we had to start all over.
When you say the big record,
No Strings.
That, okay, and we're about to have an anniversary on that?
Yep.
20?
20.
Crazy.
20 years old. Yeah. It's insane how.
I remember I was working on pop radio when the record came out. Mm-hmm. I was 18, 19 years old. Mm-hmm. And I remember the record coming out. And I remember just everybody going to buy it. It may actually still be the record for most.
No, it was just broken.
Was it?
3 years ago? Adele.
Really?
Adele just
But it lasted
it.
That long, 17
yeah.
years.
Yeah, it lasted a long time.
It sold, you may help, 2 point something million in a week.
Yeah.
Now,
I think it was 1.3 or 1.4 the first day, which was, you know, I mean, it goes back to, it just happened to be our market and our market buys CDs at the time. So that's one of those records that, like, you know, we didn't sell as many vinyl as.
But to be fair, did you ever read Outliers by any chance?
No.
Okay, there's a whole chapter in Outliers where they talk about people like a Bill Gates, mm-hmm. who happened to be someone interested in computers in a city where they had a computer at a time when a computer. So much of life
Perfect
is
storm.
Circumstance based mm-hmm. on.
Timing.
And the people willing to do the work. Timing, circumstance, yeah. person.
Yeah.
So I don't think that. It's fair to the work that you guys did to go, well, it's only because somebody was going to do
right,
that.
Right. Well, and also too, you know, the way you say it like that too, there was a lot of, like with us, we knew that it was going to be a lot of luck, a lot of timing. No matter what we did, there were a lot of other things had to fall into place. All we could do was work and we rehearsed. I mean, we knew every dance move, every song, up and down, back and forwards. We knew every scenario about, you know, what if it's this, you know, it's like we were so prepared because, you know, I don't remember the exact saying, but it's like, you know, when preparation meets
opportunity.
That's luck. Yeah, that's luck. And so we were like, we're going to be the most prepared on the planet. Like we're going to. As if we get one little shot, we're gonna blow that shot up and do the best we can.
What would be the luckiest moment where you look back and go, "Holy crap, that wouldn't happen"? I don't know the whole
Disney thing. Special. I think the
how
Disney
you got
special.
On it or how it blew up or
a little of both, a little of both. Because I think Backstreet got offered the Disney special and turned it down, and so that's when we had Johnny Wright at the time too, who's kind of managing them, and he's like, you know, we got offered this Disney special, and we're like. You know, Disney specials weren't this thing yet. It was just like, oh, well, we'll do it. You know, of course, we'll try anything. And once we did it, and it just, I mean, it exploded. It was the moment. We did stuff overseas. We were over there touring with people. We did our own tour over there. We had, you know, shows over there. And we'd go over there, and it would be mayhem and stuff. But honestly, in Europe, a lot of our beginning stages was kids would come up to us all the time and be like, the only reason we're here listening to you guys is because the Backstreet Boys aren't here. And that was 90% of our fans would say that. You know, 90%, 10% of our fans were NSYNC fans, 90% were Backstreet fans that knew that Backstreet wasn't coming to their town for another 2 years or something, so they came out to see us. So that was, you know, it took a while for us to get out of their shadow.
When they would bring you guys songs all through your career, what was the song that you heard where you were like, holy crap, that's a great freaking song?
I love Bye Bye Bye. I knew that was going to be a big one.
What did that demo sound like?
Similar
production,
you know,
when thinking back?
Some music guy singing. It was, I want to say it might have been Max. Max might have been it. Max is hilarious. Max Martin, who produced a lot of our, you know, Dennis Pop did our first couple hits. And there was this whole collective in Sweden, this group, Sharon Studios, and they did the big Backstreet hits. But Max is, he's something, man. He's this fun, just amazingly sick, talented guy. I really think Max is a right brain guy. The way he looks at music, I think he looks at it as zeros and ones, because how he knows, you know, the intricacies and the things that he puts into it, it almost seems right brain to me. It doesn't. He still has a lot of, you know, creativity. I'm not taking that away from him, but it just seems like he has such a grasp on music itself that it seems right brain. But he always, when he's singing and stuff, it makes me laugh. He's got this little, you know, this sweetest voice, and especially when he's trying to, you know, tell Justin, hey, do this, you know, and Justin's like, okay, I'll do what you're trying to do.
I was looking at the track list from No Strings Attached. Mm-hmm. The four massive singles, Bye Bye Bye, It's Gonna Be Me. Well, this I promise you, when I look back at my, because I was much more, first of all, I was a dude, so I wasn't. But
yeah, it's tough.
But I loved NSYNC more than the Backstreet Boys because of the ballads. I just love slow songs anyway. Like,
wow, that's weird.
I've always,
normally I thought it would be because of the up-tempos. But
always
the
slow stuff. Like this I promise, which by the way, it's not from No Strings, but This I Promise You, God Must Spend a Little More Time on You.
Drive Myself Crazy.
I Drive Myself Crazy video was one of my favorite videos that you guys did.
So
my
wife hates that one. My girlfriend's in the video.
I probably wouldn't like it either.
Yeah.
I think that's why I was a big fan of you guys. Mm-hmm. Gone was like,
I love Gone.
And Gone's slower than a mid. Not quite a bad. It's kind of in that.
Yeah.
But I think this is possibly one of my favorite songs, which is an interesting story. And you can tell me if this is true or not, that it was written for Michael Jackson. Just wrote this for Michael Jackson.
Yeah.
And then they said, ended up saying no. And then you guys took it.
Yeah.
And did you guys get to write a lot? Did you try to write, or were you just on the road too much working that there wasn't time to hop in a room and try to write stuff?
We tried. I mean, I tried, you know, I had, I think one or two songs, and I think they were nice enough to put them on our European albums or something. But, you know, I tried. Justin did a great job at it. JC is a great writer as well. And I mean, yeah, it was. We'd have to bring stuff on the road with us. Like, I remember I used to have a rolling rack on the road, and I'd bring it up to my hotel room. This is how old school. Like, I had an MPC and all that stuff in it. And, you know, I'd roll up there and record little ideas or whatever you had. And at the time, you know, now we could do a whole record, you know, on the road. But at the time, it's like, I got to do an idea at on the road, because you'd have to go to a studio to record the actual song. But yeah, as often as we could, you know, we'd try to work and try to get songs done. And there were always a lot of songs out there that people were offering to us as well. So
when did it become the most mayhem for you to even go to Outback?
You mean the popularity-wise?
People would see. Popularity. And you definitely had a distinct look. Not only were you famous.
Oh, with the braids, yeah.
With the braids. And
yeah.
So would you hide your hair? Like, what precautions were you taking? How crazy did it get?
Actually, like, you know, with the braids and stuff, I don't even know if I went out that much. I mean, if I did, it was to a club where we had, you know, security and, you know, you're in a section and all this stuff. Like, it's definitely not like now where, you know, I go do whatever I want and not worry about anything. But, you know, there was a time where, you know, especially if we were in town playing a show, you know, I tried to go to a mall or something and we'd have to get escorted out a side door because it just became insane. And, you know, so, but it was always during the band. Like, it wasn't, I think the longest break we ever had was, you know, maybe a couple weeks where they said, go ahead, take a little time off. And
it was a couple weeks.
Yeah, it was a couple weeks. We're like, wow, what happened?
Was ever a time where one of the guys was like, you know, I don't want to do this anymore. You don't have to say who. And you were like, you had to like talk to each other through it. Because I would assume at some point.
Yeah, not really. No, we loved doing what we did. And, you know, and the only reason I think Justin, you know, started doing his stuff was because we had taken a break. And then, you know, management was like, we're going to take some time off for a while. You know, let us set it in. Justin's a workaholic. He's like you know, he just doesn't stop. He went in and did a record and was like, I'm not going to, you know, take a break. I'm going to keep going.
You know, you have the greatest Christmas song of our lifetime.
What about Mariah Carey's, though?
I prefer this over that.
This is a good Christmas song.
I'll say this. Yeah. Arguably, our generation's greatest Christmas song.
Yeah, yeah. It's pretty cool that it's an original Christmas song, too. And now, like, you know, people are covering it, which is so cool. I'm just like, wow. It's pretty cool. We have an original, like we're old school.
When people think about somebody being as famous and having all the success that you guys have, they picture you're making $200 million, like $1 billion. Like what? Do you feel like
there's a finite amount of money that we were making? It wasn't 200 million.
It wasn't. Oh, it wasn't open ended with heavy back end.
No, because you got to remember too, there weren't the avenues as there are now. Like, you know, back then it was like, you know, we made our money off of record sales, off of merchandise, and off of touring. You know, bands today don't make their money off of record
You're
sales.
Making anything off
and
records,
and
right?
You know, they're getting it all through these 360 deals and all that stuff like that. But at the same time, their social medias are huge, and you know, millions and millions of followers gets you, you know, sponsors, gets you people, and that's how they make their money. You know, whether or not it's for what they're doing, it's for who's paying attention to them and how many eyes we can get on our product, you know, get, you know, money that way. And I'm not knocking it by any means. I think it's amazing. And, you know, same thing with all the shows that are out now. I've talked about those before, like The Voice and American Idol. Like, what a great opportunity it is for America and for us to actually find talent again. You know, they're not just some guy singing that, you know, somebody stumbles across and says, hey, I just happened to be here. You're pretty good. Let's sign you and see what happens. It's the best of the best. And you know, these kids that come off of there are just unbelievable.
Yeah, I tell the kids on American Idol a lot that, because some of them will come on and go, I don't know if I want to do this. And I'm like, do what? Be seen by 9 million people a night where everything is so oversaturated everywhere that everybody's just... It's hard to be seen at all because there's so many people being seen.
I think what's getting in their heads though is that they're not making what they think they should make off. Like, I think the American Idol people and stuff, they take a lot of their.
Well, they
whatever,
did. Yeah, more so.
They did, right?
Yeah,
okay.
More so. Yeah. Now.
No, that probably scared people off of it. Like, that's probably what it was, that they're like, man, I want control of what I do. And I don't want to be an American Idol kid that wins and then gets shelved. You know, I want to use that platform and actually do something, which is, you know, great that they're doing it. But some of them, you know, have come out of there. I mean, you know, Kelly Clarkson, jeez.
But even like a Gabby Barrett, who was my first season 3 years ago on that show, you know, she came out and the, what I think, if I'm, hopefully I'm speaking right here, they can like two or three of them, they can like take and go, hey, we'd like to sign you. I think they only have rights to one or two of them. Then they can offer the 11th place person something, but they don't have to take it.
Right, right. That's good.
And it's not as ironclad, like you have to do everything.
Right. What great promotion too. I mean, even to get 10th place.
Them.
Yeah, even get 10th place. It's like, you know, wow, you're on national TV, one of the biggest shows. American Idol for the longest time is, you know, was the show. And then the other shows come out and, you know, now there's still The Voice. All these shows are even Mass Singer, which is something
just a platform. But, yeah. If you can just be on there,
yep.
If you can be anywhere that a bunch of eyeballs will see you, that's a win.
Yeah.
It's what you do with those eyeballs, because now you're trying to create your fan base.
Oh yeah.
Like your money is creating a niche, super serving them and letting other people come into your niche. And then it's not a niche anymore.
Right.
The most successful distinct artists started as a super niche and they were different. And you're so different. But people start to see what you're doing and be into it, that so many people follow it. Billie Eilish, for example, she was just making weirdo songs.
Yeah.
I remember talking about it on a radio show a couple years ago. I was like, she is going to be so big.
Yeah.
And now what went from like a niche, dark sounding young girl, that's what people want to sound like.
Right.
And it happens in country music too, where these artists will be so different that people go, that'll never work. But when they blow up, they create a whole lane that everyone then gets behind. Yeah. It's like you were talking about when... Yeah. Backstreet and you guys and all these other
what Pearlman was doing and what happened to pop music. I mean, look, because you know, when us and Backstreet came out, Britney'd come out and Christina'd come out. It was almost always like they were coming out in groups, you know, like it was us and Backstreet. It was and even 98 Degrees too, throw them in. And you know, Christina and Britney. And it was just like this thing, because then you had the actress, what's her name? She's on, I can't think of it right now, but you've got like all this pop music and all the sound and all the hype behind what it's doing. I mean, Orlando was hilarious because we all came from Orlando. You know, Backstreet was in Orlando. We were living in Orlando. And here we'd all go downtown. And it was the same time all the wakeboarders started to get popular too. So here we are in this little town where we'd always gone out and done stuff like this. And now suddenly it became this little microcosm and this, oh man, where's the next pop actor? Who are we signing here? And like friends of ours would be like getting record deals, or this guy that we know that works, that always is just is a hanger on, or is like, yeah, I just got a record deal. You know, it's crazy just the way it all came out like that. And to be in that moment and to be there and look back on it, like imagine where if you were in Seattle during the beginning of grunge, right? And you're going to see some of these bands play in these little tiny, you know, clubs or whatever, knowing that this is going to be huge. And then suddenly, boom, it becomes this microcosm. Everybody, what's the next band out of Seattle? Where some band in Seattle was probably sitting there, you know, making $8 and sucking and getting a record deal because they were around at the right time. And that's kind of what it was like with us. I mean, we were the band that sucked. So it was like, yeah. Get that.
So what do you do? Because I see you have a show coming up in Tulsa.
Yeah.
And
it's funny when you were talking about that on the radio too. I was like, man, I only do like one or two of those a year. I had buddies of mine I golfed with the other day, and they were like, dude, we heard you on the Bobby Bones show. You said you were doing nothing this week. I was like, well, not really doing anything this week. They said, you're golfing with us today. And I'm like, yeah, that's something like you really, you know, talk about. No, I've got like this weekend, for instance, I'm going to Ohio. I host with Arnold Schwarzenegger. I do like the Arnold's Got Talent. And then I do this Miss Teen Arnold over there. I've done it for like 5 years already. And it's a lot of fun. It's, you know, Columbus, so we get to go home and see in-laws. And I do this show called, just started this ATCK thing, All the Cool Kids, that AJ from the Backstreet Boys also is a part of. And we like switch off. You know, there's just a lot of, I do, it's weird because like my schedule is like my schedule. It's not like I'm going to post all these appearances and what I'm doing. It's just like, it's just my schedule. Like, oh, I'm flying up and hosting this thing or doing this. I don't think about, oh, well, maybe somebody would want to come out to that. I'm horrible with socials. I'm learning to be better.
Who is the most 90s celebrity that you remember meeting? The most 90s, meaning?
Ooh, man.
I think you get it. The most 90s celebrity.
That would be tough. Because there was just so, I mean, you know, that, man, I don't even know. I mean, I would almost say us, you know, or like
seeing each other.
Seeing the other guys in our hairdos and outfits, or the Backstreet Boys, or Britney. Man, I don't know, like what was it, Lou Bega?
Mambo Number Five. Yeah, good one.
Something like that. There was, I mean, you know, we were all kind of. It's weird because we were all around it, you know. No Mercy. Remember No Mercy?
I do remember No Mercy.
I love those guys. Those guys are amazing guys. I love those guys.
Were just reproducing you guys like crazy and just seeing what
would
hit.
No Mercy was before us. But No Mercy, but 90 talking, Degrees was before us.
But to us, the fan,
yeah, right,
we know as first what blows up first.
Right.
So like,
well, No Mercy blew up. I mean, they were kind of dancey though. They were like a.
I think blow up is not fair. Because it was you guys didn't just
maybe
pop
maybe
culture.
As songs, maybe as songs go, they blew up. Maybe not as the band. Like they weren't, you know, I could name them all because I know them, but you probably couldn't name. Could you name any of the guys?
The guys? Yeah. No.
Right. I mean,
but you know, that's my point.
Right. Right. That's why I'm like with the new kids. It was always, you know, Joey Jordan. You know, the other guys
and the rest. Yeah.
I mean, I wasn't a big fan. I actually opened up for them, which
you did.
A funny story. In Columbus, Ohio, I made the All Ohio State Fair Youth Choir, and our choir was sitting on the sides of the stage during the show, and we started out like we sang first, and then the new kids performed, and we got to sit like in our choir segregated off area and watch the thing, and I was like, oh my God. Telling everybody, like, they're like, oh, you open up for the new kids. I'm like, man, I can dance better than the new kids. And I was like doing flips off the trees and landing on my head and, you know, break dancing, doing all this. I'm like, man, I can beat the new kids, whatever. Because I was like you. You know, I was in high school. It's like boys, new kids were not the thing that you go, oh my God, new kids. Is that the best ever? You know, it was tough. I appreciate them. I think they're great guys. But when I was in high school, I couldn't. It was just weird for me, you know, to be listening to them all the time, which is why when people come up to me, they're like, hey, man, you know, I didn't listen to you guys, whatever. I'm like, hey, that's totally fine. I get it.
But, I bet you guys do that, right?
All the time.
Because they'll do that to me, and I'm sure on a lesser level, they'll be like, hey, listen, man, I don't even like your show, but my wife loves you.
Right.
And I'm like, you don't have to say you don't like the show.
Yep.
Just say, hey, you mind if I get a picture?
Yeah.
You can eliminate all. I won't think less of you. Actually, I'll like you more.
Right, right. I think it's just kind of for themselves. Like, or maybe if one of their friends is looking, they're like, dude, you were all over Bobby Bones. I saw that, man. You totally think he's the coolest guy on the planet, don't you? You know, he's like, no way, man.
And I wish that wasn't something people would make fun of.
Right.
When you
tell me about it. Try being in a boy band.
Yeah, how rough was that? Because at times it was awesome, but if you're like around a very because you're a sports guy,
right,
masculine guy,
yeah,
and in that world, at times you could be.
But you know what though, I think that's another reason we kind of change things. Because first of all, the word boy band wasn't. I don't hardly ever remember hearing it used when we were in a band. Like maybe it was a European thing. Like because in Europe, you know, you talk about a bunch of boy bands. There was. You know, tens and tens of boy bands over there. But I think we changed that a little bit, you know, with the dancing that we were doing. And, you know, we were doing like acrobat. We were flipping, you know, we were, I think it was a little, we tried to make it a little tougher, a little bit, you know, more edgy, I guess. And hence, that's why we came up with Dirty Pop and things like that. It's like, you know, we made it to where it was, one of those things where, well, I mean, I don't tell my friends I listen to it, but I listen to it, you know, kind of thing. And I mean, now it's changed because it's definitely changed for me. Like, I don't mind running around saying I loved One Direction. You know, there's so many great songs that they've had, you know, but I'm also a dad and a husband now, and I'm not a teenage boy going, oh, I can't like One Direction. They're like, guys, and I'm not into guys. It's that funny going back to what we were talking about earlier about like the 80s and stuff. Like, look at those hair bands. Look at what they look like. They look like girls.
Yeah.
You know, all the hairspray, the makeup, everything like that. But every guy was like, dude, that guy is the coolest. I want to be like that when I grow up. I want to get all the girls like he does and everything. I'm like, you sure you're not saying she? Because you know, you never know.
Well, I'm going to end with this question that you get asked all the time, but if I don't, people are going to hit me up. Any talks about you guys getting back together, even for a thing?
After your show, when I said what I said, I've already gotten flack. But, you know, there was a lot of talks for a lot of different things, but there's nothing in the future as of right now. You know, not saying there's so many fans out there that take every little thing we say, and if we say, you know, well, we're talking, suddenly they run with it and, you know, they're getting back together, they're doing something. And then if, like I say, you know, we're not doing anything, they're like, oh, Chris, I hate Chris. He said they're never doing anything, well, whatever. But, you know, it's I can guarantee you that someday, you know, we'll do something. There's nothing as of right now that we're all planning on, you know, doing something together as the five of us, the four of us, or whatever.
Was Coachella fun when you guys
Coachella
did that?
Coachella was awesome.
With Ariana Grande?
Coachella was so much fun. And you know, it did give me, for the first time, I actually looked at it and said, you know, the four of us really aren't that bad. Like, that we could, you know, we could do it. Because, you know, Justin just released Trolls now, too. Justin's busy. Justin's got his own thing going. And it was never, you know, it was never just Justin. Everybody always blames Justin, or it's not true. It's not just him. You know, it was all of us. There was a point where a lot of us really couldn't get along that well, and really not figure out. Now we get along great again. You know, so are we going to get together? Yeah, we're probably going to get together real shortly. You know, the five of us to hang out and be brothers, because we're best friends and we're brothers. So getting the five of us together is one thing, but it's tough to do that, because even if the five of us get together, somebody sees the five of us or somebody says something like, oh, I think they're doing something. And if they're not, they're just teasing us or whatever. It's like, they're my brothers.
When you go to Collective Soul later.
Is that who I'm going to see?
It is, right, Mike?
Yeah.
Will you know most of the songs?
I'm sure I will. My buddy asked me to go, and I was like, I thought we were doing this tomorrow. And I was like, yeah, I can go. And they said this, and I'm like, oh, I can't go. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to go see Collective Soul. It's not going to be till later. I can go.
They had Shine, too.
Yep.
Whoa, heaven let your light shine.
That's a good one.
I think that it's one. The Red album. This is back when I used to do BMG or Columbia House and not pay for it.
Yeah.
You get like eight CDs for a penny.
We signed our first label we signed to was BMG, and the first thing I said was, hey, do I still owe you guys that $86 for all those CDs
Boy,
you gave me?
They would come in, too. They would just, I'd just get a stack of them, and my life was made.
Yeah,
was,
the cheap ones were great, but it's when they started, you forgot to say, no, I don't want the monthly selection for $38 or whatever.
Like 11.
Yeah.
What are they going to do? Yeah. I didn't know this at the time. I thought I was going to
come
jail.
To your house.
I thought
FBI,
I was going to jail.
Down the door. Yeah. Sometimes
people would knock and I'd be like, oh my God, is it the cops?
Yeah.
And then after a while, I was like, I guess I'm not going to jail. But then I worried my credit was ruined.
Yeah.
When I was like 14, because I started worrying about that early.
Oh, right.
And then I remember someone saying, well, it takes 7 years. And when I turned 21, I remember going, I'm clear of Columbia House. I'm finally.
Yep.
I can really let go and then live my life now.
Yeah.
Well, listen, man, I appreciate it. I appreciate you coming by.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
I appreciate you're a cool dude. You've lived around here for a while. I've lived around here for a while. We never really got to know each other.
Yeah.
But Mike, any question for Chris before he leaves?
Have fun at the show tonight. Now you know who you're going to see.
Not a question. Not a question. Any question again?
I think I'm good.
Okay. Good to see you. Episode 230. Follow Chris. I am C. Kirkpatrick on Instagram. Let's get him so many followers, he gets sponsors, and all of a sudden he's got a new way to make revenue.
Yeah.
That's the goal.
Yeah.
Help send that kid to school.
Exactly.
Private school?
No.
Nice.
Heck no. Can't do that.
Paul McCartney put his kids in public school.
Yeah.
Speaking of Paul McCartney.
Yeah.
That
was a tough decision, but I'm like, nah, he's got to go to public school.
Nice. I was leaving a juice place today, and these kids weren't a private school kids. You could tell by their uniforms. And they were like, hey, Bobby. I was like, hey, what's up? To go to, you know, blah, blah, blah. We take a picture. And then they get in a BMW SUV.
Ugh.
She was like 16 years old and gets in a BMW. And I was like, are you kidding
me? Heartbreaking.
Yeah.
So heartbreaking.
All right, there we go. I am Chris Kirkpatrick. I am C. Kirkpatrick on Instagram. We'll see you guys next time.
This festival and concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your stop before attending your next concert. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition with timeless styles that are always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort with little to no break-in period. Stop by your local Tecovas store. Have a complimentary drink. Shop new styles. If you can't make it to a store, just visit tecovas.com. TECOVAS.com. You can probably spell it. You probably know it. Tecovas.com. Find your new favorite pair of boots today. This is the year to stop overpaying for your family plan. So choose a Straight Talk Wireless family plan. Unlimited data, talk, and text on a reliable 5G network. And you can get a new line starting at $25 per line per month for 4 lines. Plus taxes and fees and no contracts. That's good decision making. Available at Walmart and on StraightTalk.com. Family plan discount with 4 lines. All on the Silver Unlimited plan. Not combinable with auto pay discount. In times of traffic, your data may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Video streams at up to 480p.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.